protesters is to make a scene and make a point through the shopping malls.
Hong Kong protesters take to the malls, but not to shop. It's Friday, December 27, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, North Korea's Christmas gift goes missing for the moment. U.S.-China trade disagreements turn the world's economies sour. That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea may not yet have delivered a so-called Christmas gift to the United States, at least not on Christmas Day, but U.S.-North Korea tensions appear far from resolved as Pyongyang's end-of-year deadline for nuclear talks approaches. From Seoul, Bill Gallo reports.
There was widespread speculation that North Korea might conduct an intercontinental ballistic missile test around the holiday season. That after a North Korean foreign ministry official earlier this month cryptically promised a Christmas gift to the United States. But there were no reported weapons tests Wednesday, and North Korean state media refrained from any major criticism of the United States. The quiet may not last long. North Korea has imposed an end-of-year deadline for the United States to soften its stance on stalled nuclear talks. Two upcoming events on North Korea's domestic political calendar may also help determine North Korea's intentions. Before the end of the year, North Korea's ruling party is set to hold a meeting of senior politicians who could announce far-reaching foreign policy decisions. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's annual New Year's Day speech will also be closely watched. In a speech last year, Kim threatened to take his country a new way if nuclear talks remain stalled. Among the more provocative options that Kim could announce, according to analysts, a suspension or termination of negotiations with the U.S., or the resumption of long-range missile or nuclear tests. North Korea has for weeks signaled preparations for a major missile launch. In late November, North Korea warned of a real ballistic missile test under the nose of Japan. In December, it conducted two engine tests, apparently for long-range rockets. North Korea's ambassador to the United Nations earlier this month declared that denuclearization is off the negotiating table and that talks with the United States are no longer needed. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
And we invite you to read more on our top story by following us at VOA Facebook Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. China, Iran, and Russia will be holding joint naval drills starting today amid tensions between Tehran and Washington. The United Nations says the war in Afghanistan has killed or injured more than 100,000 civilians in the past 10 years. Beijing says it firmly opposes trade restrictions included in a new U.S. Defense Act, having already admonished the bill for interfering in China's internal affairs. And officials in Afghanistan say Taliban insurgents have attacked an army base in northern Balkh province, killing at least 7 soldiers. Read and more at VOA Asia Facebook and on Twitter, plus VOAnews.com. This is VOA Asia. Riot police stormed into shopping malls for a third day of Christmas protests in Hong Kong on Thursday and detained a number of people after masked protesters roamed through shops disrupting business. Their actions were part of the 6-month anti-government movement to pressure authorities to meet their demands, including universal suffrage and an independent investigation into what protesters call police brutality. After 6 months, the anti-government movement in Hong Kong is showing no signs of abating. Journalist Verna Yu is in Hong Kong, and she spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson about the latest protests.
The current wave of protests started on Christmas Eve. While they are in smaller scale, i.e. they've been happening in various locations in Hong Kong, mainly in shopping centers and shopping districts, there has been a break for several weeks when we had relative calm compared with mid-November. And this time, people were responding to online calls for shopping protests, and the intention of the protesters is to make a scene and make a point through the shopping mall. They were chanting slogans such as Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Time. They were calling for an independent investigation into police brutality throughout the past 6 months in the anti-government protests. They are smaller scale protests than some of the really huge ones. This time, people want to make the point to say that we're trying to hurt the business scene in Hong Kong, because Christmas time is traditionally a time when local businesses, hotels, shops are making lots of money.
What has been the economic effect of these protests then?
They really have kind of caused a lot of disruption to shoppers, because yesterday on Christmas Day and also the day before Christmas Eve, there were a lot of protesters in Mong Kok, and then police threw tear gas and severely beat protesters and passers-by. And really, a lot of the shops closed early, and we saw a similar pattern across in Hong Kong, in Causeway Bay and also Kowloon Bay as well. Today, we also saw police rushing into some of the shopping malls after mass protesters roamed through the malls shouting slogans. Really, I think for a lot of the shoppers, it's a pretty off-putting experience. And for the shops themselves, I mean, a lot of them simply have to close early. So I think this is wreaking some sort of havoc in Hong Kong.
Now, are more protests expected this week over this holiday period?
There's an organized protest on New Year Day, January the 1st. And this one has been organized by a local group called Civil Human Rights Front, and they have applied for a permit from the police. So, yes, we are expecting another big one. But the difference between that one and the ones we saw in the past few days is that the one that's been organized by this group is expecting a large turnout if they get police permission. Usually they attract the more peaceful crowd, including old people and families with young children, whereas in the past few days, these informal protests that kind of sprung up here and there and everywhere tend to be kind of joined by a younger, more militant type of protesters.
That was Verna Yu in Hong Kong speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. The past year has seen a series of protests from Hong Kong to Chile, from Sudan to Iran, and many more places in between. In more than a dozen nations, citizens have taken to the streets to air their grievances, and many have gotten results. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir looks at a year of discontent.
In France, protesters put on their yellow vests and demanded better pay and an end to rising prices. In Sudan, the people brought down the 40-year regime of a genocidal dictator. In Haiti, they demanded the president's resignation and the prosecution of corrupt officials. And in Hong Kong, demonstrators started by standing up to the Chinese authorities over an extradition law and expanded their demands to include more democracy.
The older generations have failed tackling the biggest crisis humanity has ever faced.
Even school children have taken to the streets, demanding that adults take better care of the planet. In these countries and on the streets of Iraq, Lebanon, Ecuador, Iran, and elsewhere, citizens are saying enough and demanding a change to business as usual. The UN Secretary General has called on governments to listen to the real problems of their people.
It is clear that there is a growing deficit of trust between people and political establishments and rising threats to the social contract. And the world is also wrestling with the negative impacts of globalization and new technologies, which have increased inequalities within societies.
In response, some governments have tried to address grievances, while others use a heavy hand to try to keep power. In Iraq and Iran, hundreds of protesters have been killed by aggressive security forces. While protesters have been overwhelmingly peaceful, some in France, Chile, Ecuador, Bolivia, and Hong Kong have vandalized and looted property.
They have a right to peacefully protest. Governments, unfortunately, have been, in many cases, using excessive force, arresting people arbitrarily, sometimes even killing them, murdering them. That is illegal. The authorities who are responsible for the decisions and the killings should be held accountable, but also protesters need to behave responsibly.
Experts say protesters are less afraid.
The main thing that we see in many of these places is the break of the fear barrier. People are now unafraid to go out in the street and criticize these politicians. Something in the past used to be taboo.
Diwashi says in many cases it is now the politicians who fear the power of the people. Much of that power comes from organizing through social media, which is both a powerful tool and a vulnerability as governments cut communication networks.
Governments have realized that internet shutdowns are a great way to make it difficult for protesters to organize, but we've also seen that they still organize. You can't stop them.
As 2020 approaches, there are no signs these social media-fueled protest movements are slowing down. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Happening now in Asia, military clashes between Pakistan and India along the disputed Kashmir border are said to have inflicted several casualties on both sides. The Pakistani army is accusing Indian forces of starting the skirmishes, which divides Kashmir between the two nuclear-armed rival nations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The U.S. and China are said to be close to signing a Phase 1 trade deal in early January, a move that will see Washington reduce tariffs on Chinese goods or at least temporarily calm fears of an escalating trade war. VOA's Asia's Ira Melman spoke with this about via Skype with Mark Bush, professor of international business diplomacy at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service.
It's hard to believe that this is where we are after such a long and hard-fought battle between the U.S. and China. The big concession is simply that a anticipated wave of new tariffs won't go into effect. That seems to be the main gain. But along the way, it's remarkable that we lost sight of what originally was supposedly driving these tensions, and that's intellectual property. And we have yet to hear much on that front from either of the two sides.
This mini deal, apparently, from what you're saying, we just said it, is won't do much to stop the U.S.-China tech war, which is at the core of the trade frictions. Do you think that this does set the stage or not for future progress?
It's hard to know, given that we have some other moving parts in the story. One is that the United States actually dropped its WTO litigation against China, which was the original case around which much of the Section 301 action was taking place. And we also have the other unfortunate reality, which is that the WTO's appellate body has stopped operations, given that the Trump administration is blocking appointments of new judges to that body, and as a result, nothing will be appealed anytime soon. So if you consider those two background moving parts at the same time as you look at all the hype about the phase one, it's really hard to understand what phase two is going to be able to do and whether any credible signals have been sent about expectations for a phase two.
Can you get a read on what Donald Trump and the Trump administration is trying to accomplish here?
What's the end game? I honestly don't know. And you get that feel just looking at the contours of phase one. The big concession seems to be that China dropped some tariffs in exchange for the U.S. not following through on a new round of tariffs. It's amazing that that's where we are. We're talking about the cessation of hostilities as being the makeup of a deal. That's really not where this was supposed to have started.
Where does China really stand on this, do you think? What's your read on that?
I would bet that the Chinese are as confused as many observers at the moment. The goalposts keep changing, and I would wager that the Chinese are really concerned that the idea of phase one versus phase two versus whatever phases come after that are really all about short-term enforcement and not much about substance.
Anything else that you want to put in there that you deem to be of great importance?
2 points. One is that one of the casualties of this trade war will be the term trade deal. It's amazing that we have dumbed down that term to mean simply the cessation of hostilities. And yet it seems that on the eve of any cessation of hostilities, the market certainly gets very excited. The other is that we seem destined to reinvent the wheel. We should have, from the very beginning, been pursuing improvements in U.S.-China trade through a much more multilateral effort. We had Europe with us in 2018 on the IP issues that we brought to the WTO. How we abandoned that case, I do not know, but it really is an unfortunate turn of events.
Mark Bush with Georgetown University, speaking with my colleague Ira Melman via Skype. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name is Larry London. Tune in on January 3rd at 1500 Universal for an interesting program on border crossings featuring the songs with time in the title. It's the new year, 2020 is here, and we'll be playing songs from Michael Jackson, Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, all the hits with the word time in the title. See you at 1500 Universal on January 3rd, right here on Border Crossings.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Thousands of people knelt in prayer in Indonesia's Aceh province Thursday, marking the 15th anniversary of the Indian Ocean tsunami. The massive December 26, 2004 tsunami was triggered by an earthquake off Sumatra Island and killed about 230,000 people. This is VOA Asia.
This is Science in a Minute.
In 2012, NASA's Kepler spacecraft discovered three odd exoplanets circling a 500-million-year-old star some 2,400 light-years away. 2 years later, scientists found that the planets seemed to have a lower density than any planet in the solar system, and that they appeared to be light, fluffy, and resembled cotton candy, the favorite circus treat. A team of scientists led by researchers at the University of Colorado Boulder recently used the Hubble Space Telescope to confirm these earlier findings and find that the planets in the Kepler-51 star system represent a new class of exoplanets nicknamed superpuffs. According to NASA, although they each have a mass that's no more than several times that of Earth, because of their atmospheres of hydrogen and helium are so bloated, they are nearly the size of Jupiter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This news break from VOA Asia, people along a swath of southern Asia gazed at the sky on Thursday at a ring of fire solar eclipse. The so-called annular eclipse, in which a thin ring of the sun is visible, could be seen along a path stretching from India to Indonesia. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Mongolia was once solely a land of nomadic communities, moving from location to location depending on the season. One tribe that has lived in the isolated mountains in the north of the country for generations are the Satun. As the country urbanizes and cities continue to grow, the government has rezoned land on which they were previously free to roam. As Libby Hogan reports from northern Mongolia, young Sotin people now face the choice of moving to the city or staying and continuing a traditional nomadic lifestyle.
In the northern mountains and deep forest of Mongolia, the last surviving nomadic tribes that raise reindeer can be found. Originating from the border of Russia and Mongolia, the Sotin have lived with reindeer for centuries. The Sotin people, like Kaji Machi and her family, depend on reindeer for their way of life, living off only reindeer milk and reindeer meat until recently. Maji spoke with VOA but didn't want to appear on camera. She says many young people now are leaving this tribal lifestyle for more convenient city life.
Most young people prefer to stay in cities. When they are fresh and leave the first time, they think they will come back. But then they are influenced by other things in the city, and in 4 years, if they can find a man, then they will stay.
The last remaining herd has shrunk to around 600 reindeer, owned by about 40 families. Many are worried their culture and language could disappear. But one Mongolian woman is determined to advocate for the Sotin language, Tuvan, to be recorded and taught in schools.
Although the older generation is still speaking their language, the young generation is at risk of forgetting their native tongue because they don't learn this language in primary school. There is no curriculum, and they learn English because they will have to depend on it for tourism so they can use it to have a positive future.
Amasana plans to continue advocating for indigenous education rights and says she will continue teaching the Sotin children whenever she visits the community as a guide.
I also want to teach them vocabulary, for example, horse riding instructions if they need them. I can then say those words. That's my small contribution to them, to teach them English.
For now, many Sotin families hope by showing the calm nature of reindeer, more people will be attracted to continue this nomadic way of life. Libby Hogan for VOA News, Saganur, Mongolia.
They're crunchy, high in protein, vitamins and minerals. But for some people, none of that will be enough to overcome the idea of eating insects. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more from Thailand.
There are bugs crawling all over this farm in Thailand. This room alone is home to more than a million crickets.
When it comes to bugs, there are people who are scared of them, people who eat them, and people who don't.
Smile Farm's revenue holds steady at about $100,000 a month as nearly 2 metric tons of insects pass through on their way to becoming human snack food.
I heard on the news the UN said insects were an alternative source of protein for the future to feed the world's growing population, so I thought, Thais already eat a lot of insects and can get them as street food.
Farm owner and entrepreneur Thanat Chantatham's idea was to package the insects into snack bags. But there was a bit of trial and error finding the right bugs.
I tried black crickets. Even though I am regular when it comes to eating bugs, I still felt like their eyes were staring at me. It felt strange. Then, after we ate them, their legs and wings poked out and got stuck in our teeth and gums.
Once they worked out the kinks, their product landed in supermarkets and convenience stores in original, barbecue, and tom yam flavors. One selling point, bug snacks are healthy options.
The nutritional value of insects has not been recognized in the past, and I think nowadays we're finding that there is a huge potential.
Bugs are rich in vitamins and minerals, but also protein, and they're more eco-friendly to raise than traditional livestock. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And that's VOA Asia for today and for this week. We've made it through another one. Thanks for being with us. We will be back with you on Monday. We hope you'll join us then as well. And until then, be well.